From Tidbits on May 26th, 2008, this is the audio version of Help! I'm being held captive and all I have is a Wi-Fi network! Written by Glenn Fleischman. 2 weeks ago, a remarkable Mac owner, a teenaged Apple Store employee, led police to her stolen Mac laptop through the clever use of a Leopard feature. The recovery was so clever, it was used as a question in the rapid-fire round at the end of the NPR Chicago Public Radio's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me show on May 17th. This incident led several readers to ask via email how they could accomplish a similar feat. One person's Mac had already been pilfered. Back to my Mac can be tricky to work with without controlling all network circumstances, but it's not a bad place to start. I found two other methods and offer some rumination on other ideas. Get my Mac back! Back to my Mac! If you'd like to be as smart as 19-year-old Kate Duplaga, you can enable Back to My Mac even if you have just a single Macintosh. The feature, built into macOS 10.10.5 Leopard, requires a .Mac subscription, either a regular subscription or one that's part of the 5-user family pack. An email-only subscription available with a less expensive option won't work. In Leopard's .Mac system preference pane, use the Account tab to log into .Mac, and then click the Back to My Mac tab to start up that service. Back to My Mac requires your .Mac username and password to be accessible from another computer running Leopard. It automatically updates the .Mac servers with your computer's information whenever network information changes. If your computer is stolen, you could set up your .Mac account and Back to My Mac on another computer. Duplaga was tipped off because a friend saw her identity appear on iChat, and then access the remote machine. Your stolen computer will appear in the shared list in a Finder window sidebar. Select it, click Share Screen or Connect As, and you'll have access to the remote screen and remote files. Duplaga launched Photo Booth from the Applications folder, snapped some shots, and quickly copied those to her computer along with some other photos in the machine. The thieves, if they'd been savvy enough, could have kept the computer off a network, logged out of .Mac, or even used Back to My Mac to share Duplaga's screen. Because Back to My Mac requires a network router that uses one of two automated port mapping protocols to be enabled, Apple's NAT-PMP or the more broadly used UPnP, it's likely that a stolen computer won't wind up accessible via Back to My Mac, even though it may appear in the shared list in the sidebar. Conceivably, you could pull the IP address that Back to My Mac registers with the .Mac service and then give that to the police, who, if they had a cybercrime division, could use it to track down the appropriate ISP and then ask or subpoena that ISP for details on the IP's location, if static or assigned. I've tested different means of retrieving an IP address from Back to My Mac machines, but Apple wraps Back to My Mac inside IPv6, that's next-generation internet addressing, and I've been unable to figure out the IPv4, current addressing scheme, address also if the IPv4 address is also made available. Going deep undercover. Orbicule's undercover software and service is a nifty little package designed to keep track of your computer with minimal resource usage. The $49 application, a universal binary updated for Leopard, must first be installed to generate a unique ID that you retain and keep private. Once installed, Undercover contacts the company's servers every 6 minutes with a very lightweight request, 500 bytes, to check whether the computer is in Orbicule's database of stolen machines. The company says no ID information is passed during this request. If your computer is stolen, you use an online form to notify Orbicule using your private ID code. This updates their database, and the next time your computer comes online, the undercover process, which runs at boot regardless of whether a user is logged in, discovers its host machine is stolen and goes into reporting mode. Undercover then starts to take screenshots of the desktop and, if there's a built-in or external eyesight, snapshots through the camera. The software continually transmits this information to Orbicule. The company will contact the ISP through which the laptop thief has connected, as well as work with local law enforcement to deliver the information. After a period of time you define, Undercover will pull a trick from the old Handbook of Macintosh Practical Jokes and Pranks. It starts gradually dimming the screen in an attempt to trick the thief into trying to get it repaired or sell it. You might ask, which book? I can't recall if it's Stupid Mac Tricks by Bob Levitis or The Macintosh Joker by Owen Linzmeyer. Both came with floppies and could perform such pranks as progressively shrinking the effective screen size by one pixel on each side after each restart. Orbicule has assembled a database of Apple Store and repair shop IP addresses. Should the computer be powered up on one of those networks, your computer displays a full-screen message that, if dismissed, reappears with the fact the computer has been stolen, offering a finder's fee, paid by the company, and any custom text you provide. Here's perhaps the best part. Orbicule clearly has a sense of humor. Your computer will also use its text-to-speech capability to yell the same information, setting the volume level to its highest setting. The only fault I can find in Orbicule software, which I have not yet installed nor tested, is that if your computer isn't connected to the internet for 60 days, the second phase, Plan B, is automatically invoked. So if you go on vacation for 3 months, leaving your computer behind, heaven forfend, when you return, it will start yelling at you about being stolen. You have to contact the company with your private ID code to disable Plan B. The company is looking into ways to allow the interval to be changed. Orbicule has a variety of prices for its software, which requires no annual fee. A single-user commercial license is $49, a household license for up to 5 Macs is $59, and a site license for up to 25 Macs is $249. Full-time students pay $10 less for a single-user license and $5 less for a household license. Educational institutions pay $8 per Mac for 100 copies or more. Get back to where you once belonged. Back2U makes theft tracking software for a variety of platforms and devices. Its Mac offering, Very One for Mac, is somewhat simpler and comes with no recovery service. The software costs $39.90, is a universal binary, works with Leopard, and has no recurring fees. Very One requires that you enter a password whenever it connects to a network. If the password is entered incorrectly, Very One starts recording audio and video with a built-in eyesight, if available, and sends you alerts that include network information and a scan of nearby Wi-Fi networks through a variety of services, via instant messaging, email, Twitter, and on a web page. Very One doesn't use or require any corporate intervention in recovery, instead letting you handle everything. That may or may not be a plus, depending on your situation and preferences. There's also the cleverly name-checked CompuTrace LowCheck for laptops, which has nothing to do with the car theft prevention and recovery service except a name licensed by its maker, Absolute Software. As far as I can tell from the minimal information on the company's website, the software regularly contacts the company's servers, and when you alert Absolute Software that your computer is stolen, they work with you and law enforcement to track it down via network access. It's a subscription package and costs either $49 per year or $99 for 3 years. Distributed Decentralized Identification. I learned about a very low-tech solution used by many police departments around the United States and Canada from Cornell University's Oliver Habicht, pictured here with a super cool laptop etching, a friend of the angsts. Called Operation ID, the program lets individuals, academic institutions, and companies engrave or etch a unique identifier in some indelible fashion onto objects that need to be protected. This Operation ID is not to be confused with programs of the same name in North America used to educate retailers about underage alcohol and cigarette sales. The ID is a left-to-right, geographically largest to smallest, human-readable code. It starts with a state or province abbreviation or a corresponding number, like MN or NY, followed by numbers that identify the county and then the police department. The final digits are a unique number assigned by the police department that can be assigned to an individual or to an organization. In some places, police prefer the ID as the simpler formula of the state or province's two-letter postal abbreviation, followed by a driver's license number. Oliver researched the program before committing laptops purchased by Cornell to be labeled with Operation ID numbers, but neither of us could find any centralized authority, website, or canonical information about it. I've come to the conclusion that Operation ID is a meme, a kind of mind virus, rather than an actual program. Visiting dozens of local websites that describe the program, there's no reference to any official centralized source or even references to how the program started. On one site, it's described as being 30 years old. I suspect it's a combination of useful bureaucracy, in which police departments are used to being assigned numbers within state hierarchies, and someone's bright idea in the 1970s that was simply passed along, almost as a form of oral history crossed with procedure. Police myth, if you will. The relatively standardized form in which the ID is used means that it's perpetuated itself, and means that many officers and precincts should be familiar with it. If you pair a Google search of Operation ID with your town or college, you can typically find out if your local law enforcement system offers the loan of an engraving pen or help with engraving, and whether they register your ID. Minnesota State University has a good explanation of their rendition of the program. Some departments will hand out Operation ID stickers that you can put in your window, ostensibly to deter thieves. Oliver noted that Cornell's Operation ID policy says property can be traced, quote, by computer back to the university. He contrasts this with the fact that the number assigned to him was written on a piece of paper and placed in a filing cabinet. In recovery, clearly there's room to provide more association of stolen gear with those who own it. Given that Macs, like most electronics of any kind, have unique serial numbers and, unlike most electronics, can read those serial numbers within the operating system, means that there should be a way to connect a uniquely numbered Mac, its owner, and the computer's location. I would think that there's room for a Mac developer to work on a theft recovery service with Skyhook Wireless, which can compute a set of location coordinates using a scan of nearby Wi-Fi networks and their signal strengths around a computer. Skyhook already has an API that allows external access to their systems via a web page and partners with companies like Apple on the iPhone, alongside a Google cell triangulation system, to provide GPS-like results. Skyhook already has a deal in place with a Cyber Angel for Windows-based theft recovery services with Wi-Fi positioning. It seems like a short step for a stolen Mac to phone home and say, "Help! I've been stolen and I'm being held in a warehouse in Santa Rosa Crucia." Then it's just a matter of convincing the police that no psychics were involved in determining the system's whereabouts. This is Tidbits. To follow links, make comments, read articles, and subscribe via email, RSS, or Twitter, visit us at tidbits.com. I'm Adam Angst, and thanks for listening.